Welcome to the Introvertpreneur Podcast. Take a breath because you are in the right place and you can finally stop apologizing for being an introvert. I'm Tara and I've discovered how to thrive as an entrepreneur while being 100% true to myself. Now I want to help you do the same. In these episodes, you're going to find everything you need to build a successful service-based business so you can stop competing with extroverts and grow and market your business with ease. Are you ready? Welcome back to another episode of the Introvertpreneur Podcast. Our special guest today is Sarah Waite, a photographer and copywriter who is all about helping you to express your real, honest self through your words and your photos. And I am a huge fan, so I am so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I am so excited. I feel like I kind of know you, but we've never actually connected like this. So I would love to hear more about you and your story.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, I'm so pleased you just said that, because hopefully that means the copy on my website is doing its job, that you feel like you know me a little bit. So yay!
Your website copy is fantastic.
Thank you. So a little bit about me. My business is Sarah Waite Creative, and I call myself a creative copywriter and brand photographer. Basically, I work with creative service providers, and I usually say feisty female business owners, people who've got like a real strong sense of who they are, that really want to encompass their personal brand in their business. Those are the kind of people that I lean towards, even if it's not something that they outwardly project, but they want to get that personality across somehow, whether that's through their words or their photographs, and the two work really nicely. I'm based in BC, but I am not from here originally, as you can probably tell by my accent. I've lived in Canada for the last 5 years, but I'm from the UK originally. And yeah, I think that's pretty much sums it up.
I love accents. So every time somebody comes on and they have an accent, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I love it. But then I hear people tell me all the time, oh, you have an accent, a Canadian accent. Yes. I can really hear it. And I'm like, oh, right. I would have an accent.
I love the Canadian accent. It's one of the things when people are always going to me, oh, I love your accent. I'm like, but I love yours too. So it's all good.
I do notice since connecting with people around the world that I do actually say A a lot at the end of sentences. And I never realized it. I heard that was like a common thing of like, oh, Canadians always say A. And I'm like, yeah, I don't do that, but I do.
It's fine. We find it endearing. So carry on. Mm-hmm.
So I would love to talk about, I know when we first connected about you coming on the podcast, you had mentioned that, you know, you're also an introvert, which I think a lot of people, if they like listen to you right now or go to your website, like it doesn't feel that way. So I'm curious, mm-hmm. like, what does being an introvert mean to you, and how have you kind of navigated that as you're building your business?
Yeah, that's a great question. I only really discovered the idea that I might be an introvert in the last few years, in the last like 3 or 4 years, I think it is. I'd recently kind of learned a bit about being an HSP, a highly sensitive person. If you've heard that term before. And there was something, it kind of tied into introversion as well. So I started to read a bit more about that. And the thing that really connected with me was the fact that when I'm in like a big room full of people, there's lots of networking, lots of being on and having to be extrovert, you know, putting yourself out there. I can do it for very short periods, but the recovery time for me is incredibly hard. And I would go to an hour's networking session and then I'd have to come home and lay in bed with a migraine for 3 days trying to get over it afterwards. Mm-hmm. It was so tough, so difficult. So I really struggled with that. But as I've kind of gone on and I've leaned into my introversion, I've leaned into the fact that I struggle with these things. I know I can do them, but I have to put things in place to prepare for them. And one of the things, like you say about on my website and how I am now, talking one-on-one with people is actually one of the ways I deal with my introversion. I find it a lot easier to connect with people one-on-one. So I do a lot of my networking in that way. And I put my, I said to you before we started recording, I wear my extroversion. It's in the colour of my clothes and the fact that I have crazy bright hair and the tattoos and, you know, the things that I put on my body. These are the things that help me to be a bit more extrovert without actually having to be extrovert myself. It usually helps to like spark conversation that I would struggle to do. And, you know, as I looked back on how I was when I was younger, it was definitely I was described as the shy kid. And I think that's really typical of a lot of people with introversion, is that they find it difficult to broach those topics and, you know, meet people and start talking to people. Being the first person to start talking is a real struggle. So the fact that I've just kind of found ways to let that happen without me having to do that, if that makes sense. So that's why I when people sort of look at me and go, really, you're introverted? I'm like, I really am. You put me in a room full of people, I will be in the corner just watching what's going on. That's all I do in a big, busy room full of people. But put me in a place one-on-one like this, and this feels like the best place for me.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. It's almost like, I feel like a lot of introverts, we have to feel comfortable. And sometimes that means being at the back of the room and like observing and taking it all in for a little bit until we have that comfortability a little bit. But I find it funny that you said about starting conversations, because I honestly don't think I ever started a conversation with a single person until I was maybe in my mid-20s. Yeah, I was like, I would never start a conversation.
No, exactly. Even now, when I try to start conversations, I'm not very good at small talk. It's not a skill I've ever learned. I also think I might be on the ASD spectrum as well, which I think is a part of that. But I would go when I did try and start conversations with people, it would be straight in at the deep end, something very deep and meaningful or way too much information, totally scaring the life out of them and having them run off in the other direction. So I stopped doing it. I just sat there and waited for people to come to me in the end.
Yeah, I think the first time I tried it, I was at a 9-to-5 job and I was on break and we were outside. And actually, I think it was a fire drill. I think we had a fire drill. And so everyone was outside and I was standing next to this person I didn't really know. And I was like, just say something, just start a conversation. Like everyone else around you is talking and they're not talking to anyone. And I said, I forget what I said, but they didn't hear me. And I was like, this is a horrible first time.
The embarrassment. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's kind of like that when you think somebody's waving at you and then you realize they're waving at somebody else behind you or something. It's that absolutely, awkward moment. Yeah. So yeah, I can totally relate to that. And I think a lot of times, like there's a lot of famous people who are like, whenever I read those posts about like, 20 famous celebrities who are introverts that you wouldn't have thought of. It's like, how can you be famous or like be an actor and be on stage if you're an introvert? But really there's a lot of different types of introverts. I think the main component in all of us is that we don't get energy from a room full of people. Extroverts, that's how they get energy. Like that just amps them up. They're ready to go for like a week afterwards, whereas we are ready for bed for a week afterwards.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you talked about in that kind of area, you would expect extroversion is like a necessity for some particular things that you do. I mean, even running a business, you kind of expect really that you need to be an extrovert to run a business, because I think for the longest time, especially when I first started running my business, it was run by, the world seemed to be run by extroverts. It was all people vying for attention on social media and blogs. And, you know, I mean, blogging was the big thing back then before sort of social media really came along. But it was the louder you could be and the more you could put yourself out there, the more successful you were. And that was something I really struggled with actually initially in my business. I remember writing a blog post years ago now about like how there was just too much noise and I couldn't cope with it. And how was anyone supposed to, you know, successfully have a business when they're shouting into a huge void and with all of these other people saying the same things? And it was, I think I love that the fact in the last few years it's turned around and we're seeing much more, there's a lot more being talked about in the way of like being an introvert and running a business. So it makes me happy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I feel the same way. There was none of that years ago. Like when I first started, and then actually I started before Instagram existed. So it was like when Instagram came out, it was all like, you know, you had to like show up every day. You had to like show up live. You had, then Reels came out, and you had to do Reels and you had to like dance and lip sync. And I'm like, there is no way. Like if this what it takes to grow and market a business, no, thank you.
Exactly. I remember the day Reels came out, I cried. I was like, how am I supposed to do this? This is just not me. It's like, I'm out, I'm done. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Instagram is one of my favorite platforms. And over time, I've learned how to make Reels work for me in a way that feels much more manageable for me. But yeah, initially it was like, there's no way I can keep up with all of this. It's too much. My brain hurts.
Yeah. So how would you describe your business like right now? What are you doing to get visible and get out there and grow your business? Because I know you said you like one-to-one connections and you do love Instagram. So I'm curious to hear what you're doing in your business.
Yeah. So I've found a way to, for me, making Instagram work was actually about being given a permission slip in that I didn't have to do all the things that everyone said I had to do. So I don't show up there daily. I probably show up there maybe twice a week maximum, but it's usually because I've got something to say. That's, for me, that was really important. I you know, when you have like words of the year, and one of my words last year was consistency, but I was really clear on that I didn't want it to be about consistency of how often I was showing up on something, but more about what I was saying and the messages that I was putting out. I wanted those to be consistent. So I guess like quality of my message.
Consistent quality is what I was
saying. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Totally. So that was much more important to me. And I think that's how I've treated Instagram, is like I put stuff out there now that feels very consistent with what I want to say and what, and you know, what the message that I want to put out there. So that's one way that I've dealt with that. But for me, it's I'm a writer. I love to write to people. I love letters. I've turned my email into the thing that's really probably my biggest marketing tool. I actually email my list 3 times a week, which sounds terrifying. But since I've started doing that, I've had so much engagement from it. I get loads of replies from people. It's sparked up so many conversations. And that feels much more sort of in tune with the whole being one-to-one. And that's my absolute favorite thing to do now.
Yeah, that's what I love about email. It's like it's one to many, like you're sending an email to your list, but with personalization, with thinking about your audience, it feels like you're speaking one-on-one or you're writing to a friend.
Yeah. And that's how I write it as well. I only think about there being one person. I try not to think about, you know, however many people there are subscribed to the list, because that becomes a little bit overwhelming. Yeah. So I write to one person. That's how I've always done it. And I think that's why it connects a lot more, because I am just picturing one person and I'm treating it like I think when people sign up, it says, be my pen pal, you know, it's very much, I want it to be a conversation as opposed to me just talking at people. So I think that's one of the biggest ways that I've made myself visible. I've grown my list in the last year from, I think it was something, I started off at like 160 subscribers at the beginning of last year, and I'm up to about 1700 now, I think it is, something like that. So
it's
because I love doing it. It's definitely something that's been really, really key, I think, to me.
I think that's a big piece of it too. I feel like you love doing it, so it's easier for you and you enjoy showing up, and people can feel that even through written word. Like,
yes.
So if you're on a platform or doing something that you don't enjoy because you feel like you have to,
exactly,
you may not be getting the results that you'd like anyway. And you're probably draining your energy, burning yourself out.
All of that. It shows as well. If you're doing something that you don't enjoy, it does show. Even if you're making the effort and you're trying to put all of the things into it, people can tell if there is something about what you're putting out there just doesn't quite feel right, because you don't feel right about it. I've noticed when I've done stuff, you know, when I first started my first attempts at Reels, honestly, you go back and look at them now and it's horrendous, because I didn't want to do them. I fought against them with my whole being, and you could tell it was just, I had no engagement from them. It was pointless. I didn't know why I was doing it, really, in all honesty.
Mine were the same. They were, oh my gosh, they were awful. And I'm like, I feel like I have a lot to say, but because you could tell I was so uncomfortable, it didn't hit. So I was like forcing myself to do it, stressing myself out. And then it wasn't even actually doing anything.
This is it. And then you end up dreading it and ended up not saying anything at all. So yeah, what is the point if it's going to stop you from actually doing the things that you love to do and speak? That was a big mindset shift for me, actually. It was somebody said to me about when you're sort of talking about going out on these platforms and being visible, it was looking at it from the perspective of not that you're trying to sell to everybody, but that you're looking forward to telling people about things that you love and what you do. Basically, you get to talk about what you do today because it's the thing that you love the most. We don't run our businesses because we think we're supposed to. We run our businesses because we love what we do. So why don't we talk about what we love to do? And that was something that really hit home for me and made me realize, actually, yeah, I don't have to do any of the things anyone is telling me. Mm-hmm. I do the things that feel that connect with me and that I love doing.
Yeah, I think that's a big piece of like, and that's how you can tell that you're a fantastic copywriter, because it's kind of the same with email. It's like, I hear a lot of times like, oh, I struggle with being consistent or emailing my list because I feel like I'm just selling all the time. And I'm like, well, you don't have to sell all the time. You can like,
exactly.
Email isn't just for, here's a weekly flash sale, here's a coupon code, here's
exactly
cost action pricing. Like it can be just a way to build trust, and that will deliver later on. It doesn't always have to be that instant gratification of, yay, I sent an email about a sale and I got 10 people signing up.
Yeah, exactly. I think the more you keep sending those, the easier they become to ignore. The people on your list will just start to ignore them. For me, if I'm going to put anything selling in my emails, it's usually in the PS because that feels most natural to me. Just, it's here if you want it. Here are some links. And I like the no pressure kind of sales. Unless, of course, I am, you know, launching a new service or I really want to push a particular service, then I'll do a little email sequence that is geared towards that particular service. But I like to do it in a way that people can opt out if they don't want to hear about it. And the ones that do want to hear about it, great. They're getting all of the information and they're getting the sales pitch then. But my emails, I've got them set up on I have three a week and they're themed basically. The one that goes out on a Monday is a lesson. So it's like sharing a piece of information that I found, something that I think is really useful, something that's geared towards copywriting usually or brand photography. And there might be a little bit of a link towards a particular service if it ties in nicely. And then on my Wednesday one I send out, it's just links of things that I found around the internet that I think are fun, that I think are useful. People love them because I share some of my own stuff as well. I might share a blog post or a podcast that I've been on or something like that. So it all kind of it's just fun stuff. And then on Friday, there is no selling. I call it my unapologetic insights. And it's just things that are crossing my mind and I want to have a conversation. And those are the ones that usually prompt responses from people as well. We end up having like backwards and forwards conversations with each other from like topics that I've talked about. And it is just, again, it's like you said it yourself. It's about creating that connection and being top of mind so that people remember you and remember what you do, not necessarily constantly saying, I have these services or buy from me or book me or whatever. But when people do sort of come around to thinking, oh, I really need a copywriter. Hold on a second. I know one that I get lovely emails from every week. That's how it works.
Yeah, that's so true. And I feel like it's another thing. It's like, you know, if you get those emails and you're excited to open them, like you said, that you're going to be top of mind whenever that comes up, or they think about, oh, I really like, I think now is the time for me to like redo my website copy. Oh, I know who I can, like, I can go to their website and check out what they have available now, or how they can help me. And then also that's where the branding then comes into play, because the branding will also help you stick. Cause your branding, I spot it a mile away and I love it so much. And I think that is important too, as well as the words and the messaging.
Yeah, definitely. It came, my branding was very different back when I was just a wedding and not just a wedding and portrait photographer, but, you know, when I was a wedding and portrait photographer, not a copywriter, because I had a different audience then. It was very sort of hearts and flowers and this beautiful, it was like a gorgeous teal blue. My logo was to die for. I had it done professionally by somebody. I fell in love with it. I was very sad to put it to bed when I moved across to Sarah Waite Creative with the copywriting, but my audience had changed. It was such a different audience, and I had changed as well as a business owner, and I knew I wanted it to be something much bolder and brighter and, you know, with much more personality to it. So that's how it all kind of came about, really. But I love that you said that. You know, when you see it, it makes me happy.
Yeah, everyone listening, go check out Sarah's website and you'll see what I'm talking about if you haven't seen it before.
It's very outlandish. You might want sunglasses. It's quite bright. So
I love it. I'm always drawn to the bold, bright colors, which
Yeah, same.
It's just, I don't know. They just make me happy. And
exactly.
And I know, so I hear a lot from people, and I know I talk a lot on the podcast about copywriting and using your words if you don't want to speak or show up on video. But I feel like sometimes introverts especially really struggle with their brand voice, and that in turn kind of impacts how well they're able to get their message across in their copywriting. Mm. So I know you have the homepage copy kit, yes. And you're offering my listeners an awesome deal. So I'd love for you to talk about that and kind of, because I read through that sales page and I was like, I love that this isn't just a template. It's also about the why and the structure behind it.
Yeah. So that kind of came about because I work with a lot of creative service providers, and for me, the homepage is the most important page on your website that you can have above.
Also, hardest. It's usually the hardest.
Absolutely, it is the hardest. Definitely, it has a big job to do. It's got one goal, and that one goal is to connect with people who first arrive on your website and draw them in to go and look at the rest of your website, basically. And a lot of people, they fall foul to certain things, like treating their homepage as a sales page, for example. They try and do all of the selling immediately, which I always come back to. I call it it's like a shop window analogy, which feels a bit old fashioned now, because I think I wrote somewhere the other day, I need to change this analogy because it sounds a bit like Victorian staring through the ye old candy shop thing. But it is that front window. You're attracting people to have a quick glimpse inside and decide whether they want to come through the door and actually really look around. So, yeah, so there's a lot of things that people, I don't want to say mess up, but they get wrong on their homepage, and people will bounce away from that quicker than Tigger on you know, a very happy day, basically, because of the way the world is now, in that we have so many options and we have so many things, so many different places that we can go to. So, yeah, so I wanted to really focus in on helping people to build a homepage that helps them to connect with their, you know, their perfect clients. Not their perfect, no, let me take that back. Not perfect clients. I hate that phrase. the clients that they love to work with, basically. So I wanted to kind of dig into why there's a structure to your homepage, how to, you know, include certain elements, the kind of language to use on there, how to make it conversational, how to talk to your audience as opposed to it being all about yourself. And so it started out from being a template. As I built the course out, it just became something much bigger. So it's quite in depth. There's a lot of, the first module is all about really the prep and behind the scenes before you even start writing your homepage. And the actual then writing part of it is a fairly short bit towards the end. There is a template in there as well, just to make things very easy. But I wanted it to be, I wanted people to understand why they were doing certain things on their homepage, why they were structuring it in a certain way.
Yeah, I love the storefront window analogy, because it's kind of like you said it, how you described it, it kind of made me think of, yeah, you're right. Like if somebody uses their homepage and it's like structured and the copy is written like a sales page, it's almost like if you were to look in the front window of a store and the window is just plastered with like posters of like 30% off sale, exactly. Sign up now. And you can't even see into the store to know, yes, if you want to go in or not.
Exactly. Yeah. Or even that moment that you do step through the door and there's someone straight away going, how can I help you? What do you want? What can I get you? Do you want, you know, it's.
Oh, that
it's
always bothered me in stores. Exactly. I'm glad that's not really happening now.
So much. I know. When they would follow you around going, are you okay? Do you need anything? I'd be like, no, leave me alone. I just want to look around. Thank you. But yeah, it's that kind of feeling. It's even like using that as an example for like where you put all your calls to action on your homepage, because some people can really go bang, bang, bang with so many calls to action right at the very top of their homepage, and it's too much. I'm all for having calls to action. I'm a copywriter. Calls to action is one of my war cries when I talk to my clients. I'm like, calls to action, they must be there, but there has to be a limit as well. I think like throwing too many at people in the very first few seconds that they're on your website is just, it's just asking them to go, no, I'm gonna leave now.
Mm-hmm. Which I think a lot of listeners can probably identify with, that can resonate with that too, because I feel like a lot of us are also multi-passionate, which is maybe also why the homepage is so hard, because maybe, yeah, we do have a lot of offers, we do have a lot of interests and kind of sub audiences. So it's hard to kind of put that all together into one.
Yeah, absolutely. But I always say to people, you've got a whole website to tell them everything that they possibly want to know. Your homepage is to help them get to the bit that they really want to see first. That's all that your homepage has to do. It just has to take people into your website just a little one step further so they can go and find out a little bit more about you.
Oh, you've got me thinking about this store analogy, because now when you said that, I'm thinking, okay, so then the homepage gets somebody to walk through the door, and then it's like how you said about where you want to get them to go on your website. That's almost like when you walk into a clothing store, for example, and they have like little signs hanging down for the women's clothes and the men's clothes and the kids' clothes.
Yeah, exactly. This is it. Do I want to go here today or do I want to go over here today? Yeah, exactly. Yep.
I love that. Yeah, we will have the info and the link and the details for that in the show notes for you to go check that out. But I know a lot of people could definitely use that. I feel like I could use that right now. Like when I redesigned my website the last time, I feel like I just threw the page together really quickly, because actually it's funny, I did, because I didn't realize I did something with the domain, and I didn't realize that what I did actually switched it. So I was like, I need to get this up like now. My website's down to like fix it.
I am so terrible for doing that. I bought a brand new, last year? I bought a brand new theme, and I could not wait like the 5 minutes to figure out, let's do this properly. And I installed the theme and I broke my website entirely. And I was like, oh. So I had, at the time, I was right in the middle of, I think I was in the middle of a course or something, so I couldn't touch it. I had too many things going on. So I just had to throw up a landing page saying, sorry, I broke my website. It'll be coming back soon. You know, it was just, I really should learn to, you know, be patient and do these things properly.
It happens to all of us. So I want to kind of, I know you're also a photographer, and I love photography, and I kind of just want to talk a little bit about, because I know a lot of introverts also maybe struggle with getting brand photos and being comfortable in front of a camera to get those kind of visuals for their website. So I'd love to hear if you have any thoughts or best advice for somebody who's like, I really want to like have brand photos done. I really want to improve the visual side of my branding and my business, but because I know I always feel like I smile very awkwardly when a camera is pointed at me.
Yeah, it's it's funny. I became a photographer because for the very reason that I didn't like being in front of the camera. That's why I started my photography business, funnily enough. But what I've learned over the years, because I tend to, whether it's because being an introvert, I attract more introverts, I mostly work with people who hate having their photos taken. So that it seems to be the way. But the things that I've learned is very much about definitely finding a photographer who understands about, you know, what your struggles are with having your pictures taken, because it's different for everybody. For some people, it is just the thought of them being the center of attention, for example, or being out in a public place and there's a camera pointing at them, so other people are going to be looking at them. That can be a real struggle for people. For some people, it can be parts of their, you know, their physical, the way they are physically, that they really struggle with having their picture taken. So if you actually find a photographer where you can have these conversations with them, they can be ready for that and help you through that process. I spend a lot of time talking to my clients before we work together. So before we actually go out on a photo shoot, we have meetings, we chat back and forth. There's lots of like emails back and forth. I get them to send me like pins of photos that they really like. And we, you know, so we have a whole conversation. We build a little relationship before their actual shoot. And then on the day of their shoot, I like to try and do something. For me, I don't work in a studio. I like to be out and about with people. So we'll go to a place that they really like. It's usually like a park they like, somewhere outdoors maybe. It might be a particular coffee shop that they really like to go to. It might be their home office that we'll start at, and then we'll move off outside. But I always start with getting them to do stuff, things that feels quite natural to them. So it could be like, you know, the usual tapping away on their laptop, writing in a journal, drinking a coffee, you know, petting their dog, whatever it is, all the things. So they're not actually focusing on having their pictures taken. We're actually having a conversation. I am taking photos while we're having that conversation, and they're just doing the things. And that helps to, I find that helps for them to just relax a little bit more with having their picture taken. I'm also a really big advocate, not every photographer is, but I'm a really big advocate for showing them what's going on the back of my camera. I really like to be able to show them, oh, this shot, look how lovely you look in this one. And it helps. As I do that, I see their confidence levels rising. Mm-hmm. So usually by the time we get to the more like headshot style, you know, more posy type of things, they're feeling a lot more confident because they've seen already that they've got lots of fantastic photos that they're going to be able to pick from. But yeah, it's the way I work is very much a conversation. We have fun, but there's usually lots of laughter and joking back and forth. I make funny noises when I get excited, so that usually helps too. So yeah, it's I always say it's find the photographer that you think is going to work for you. If you love their style of photography, that's always a good start. But have a conversation with them. Most of them will do like a consult beforehand, so you can get to know them, whether it's over a Zoom call or whatever. And I would definitely, yeah, just be open with them and explain, I really struggle with this. This is not something I'm used to doing. I am an introvert. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you know, ask them the question, is that something you can deal with? You know, are you used to dealing with people like me? Can you help me to pose and do all of these different things? So I would say that's probably the best advice I can give someone who's maybe, you know, looking for a photographer for the first time, or get referrals from people that you know who are maybe similar to you but have had pictures taken before. Ask them who they've worked with. That's always a really good way of finding someone who understands. And there are plenty of photographers who are introverts out there as well. So for a lot of photographers that I know, the reason they became photographers is because they didn't like being in front of the camera. So they get it.
Yeah, that's so important. I found for me too, when I have photos, I have to, like, I know a lot of photographers, I see a lot of like 20 minute like mini sessions, and I'm like, I will not be comfortable at all within 20 minutes. Like, I'm going to be so like, yeah, I need at least a 2-hour session to know that I have the time to relax and come out of my shell a little bit and feel comfortable. Cause yeah, I just know that that's the best case for me.
It's true.
And I'm going to be relaxed too, because I know I have more time. Like, I'm not feeling rushed or like, oh, I need to make sure I get this shot and this shot. Like,
yes, definitely. Like you say, you do relax into it. All of my best shots with people tends to be in the last like half an hour of a shoot. Because by that point, they just don't care anymore. And then we're having fun. We've usually connected over something and we're just chatting away. It's like, two friends having a conversation and a meetup. And there just happens to be a camera there by the end of it. So yeah, that definitely helps. And also, before you go into your shoot, doing anything that makes you feel more relaxed as well. I always say to people, when people sort of say to me, oh, you know, what should I wear? Should I go and get my hair and makeup done? Should I do this? All of these sort of questions. I always say, do what makes you feel like the best version of yourself, where you feel you're most confident. For some people, that is wearing slightly more comfortable clothing, you know, that's not really very dressed up, but they feel relaxed and comfortable so that they're not constantly pulling at, you know, shoulders and bits and pieces. And being in a space where they feel happy and confident, whether that's like their own office space or going out to a favorite coffee shop or something like that, is if your environment is somewhere that you're happy and confident in, that will show through in your face, in your mannerisms, everything. So that's a really big thing.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I imagine like anytime I go into a new space, like a new business that I've never been in before, I'm like, I have to like take a look at everything, like make note of where like all the decor and all the details and like.
Exactly. You have to prep. You're preparing yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know we're recording this like earlier, but when this episode goes live, we are going to be in the middle of promoting the 4th annual Introvertpreneur Virtual Summit. And I'm so excited because you are also a speaker this year. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about what they can expect from your presentation at this year's summit.
Oh, I'm so excited to be part of this. Thank you very much. So I submitted the topic about unleashing your brand's unique voice, especially in your writing when you're an introvert. I think the title I called it was Quietly Quirky, Unleashing Your Brand's Unique Voice in Writing as an Introvert. That's the full title. So I really want to tackle the idea of how you bring your unique voice into your words, basically. That's what the overall theme is going to be. And that's going to be talking about things like, without giving too much away, obviously, because I want people to come to the summit, right? So, but talking about things like how you can make your writing more conversational. That's a really big thing. I feel when people do start writing, one of the things I talk about a lot is how when people write, they remember how they were taught to write back in school. So it comes across as very academic. They change the way they write is very formal and it doesn't sound like them. And I want your words to sound like they've literally fallen out of your mouth and onto the page. That's a really big thing that's important for me. I want people to be able to read your words. And then when they meet you, go, I feel like I know you already because I've already read all of your stuff. And this is exactly what you sound like. So bringing that into your copy. And actually, it's really not that difficult. It takes a bit of practice, but it's not difficult to do. So those are some of the things that I'm going to be sharing with you.
I'm excited because as much as I love, like the written word is definitely my thing too, with in terms of written content. Yes. I find that I have to like go back and refine it because at first I'm like you said, I'm a little formal, direct, mm-hmm. to the point. I don't want that to come across. I don't want to come across that way.
Well, as I said, some people speak like that in the everyday, but not many people do. It's a thing we've been left with. We were only ever taught to write one way in school, and that was academically, you know, because nobody teaches you how to write in a way that sounds like you, because everybody sounds different. We always use different language. We use words in different orders and different like slang words and, you know, things. There's certain things that we all do to speech that is very much unique to ourselves. So they can't teach everyone to write like that because there's too many differentiators, basically. So they teach everyone in a very uniform way, and we all come out of school and that's all we remember, that's all we know. So that's something I talk about an awful lot actually in my group and stuff. So that it's something I want to get people past. It's like, you have a personality, it's not academic, let's embrace that and make you sound like you. So
I love that. Yeah, it's kind of like they were training us all to be like fit in this one little box, like little writing robots. Started thinking of ChatGPT.
Exactly. I mean, ChatGPT has a very distinct way that it speaks at the moment. Mm-hmm. This is quite telltale. So yeah,
there's a lot of words that are very common with ChatGPT. The word unleash has been ruined for me.
It's in my title. I might have to rethink my title now.
See, I didn't even notice it there because it makes the quietly quirky, like that's so you. I was like, yeah, this is your presentation. But unleash, unlock, ChatGPT just loves so those many, words.
Yeah, it has got its favorite words, definitely. And it's quite, people are actually starting to be able to tell that now as well. I mean, I don't like to hark on about people using ChatGPT instead of copywriters because it's fine. It doesn't bother me. If people want to use ChatGPT, that is absolutely fine. I think it's a great tool for ideas. Mm-hmm. idea generation, it, you know, maybe fixing a few sentences here and there, I think it's brilliant. But it has its own very distinct voice. And there are a lot of people that are starting to sound like ChatGPT. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Yeah. You definitely need to use it as a tool so that it can actually help you understand your own voice rather than I've seen a lot. The horrible side of it is the copying pasting. Like if I was to get a lot of outputs that had the word unleash in there like 30 times and I just copied and pasted that, people would look at that and be like, doesn't really sound like Tara.
Absolutely. The thesaurus is a wonderful tool as well, I will point out.
Yeah. I've even gone back and asked ChatGPT. I'm like, can you, like, what is something you can use instead of unleash? I do not want to use this word.
I've had conversations with that recently. I've gone, that's good, but can you do it without using these words? And then it will come back with a whole bunch more and still use those words. And I've actually said to it, you're not paying attention to me. I said,
Oh, that's funny. I had a little argument with ChatGPT last week because I was like, I forget what it was. I wanted it to review a sales page for something. And it was like, I'm sorry, I'm not able to browse the internet. I'm like, I'm on ChatGPT-4. I have the extension. You've done it before. Yes, you can. Yeah. And it's like, oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
Well, at least it apologized to you. Yeah. Amazing.
Awesome. So this has been so much fun. I know everyone's going to love this conversation and be able to connect with you. And you're so much fun to talk to. Like I could
go forever,
but I want to definitely be mindful of your time. So I'd love for you to share where is best for somebody to connect with you or how you typically work with clients. If anyone is looking to have copy done by an expert. Because I do think that's a really good investment, especially your homepage copy. Like if you're struggling with it, don't struggle in silence. Like
absolutely. Yeah. And I will say, and obviously I know I'm giving the offer to your listeners for the 20% off of the homepage copy kit, but if they're not quite ready to, you know, to buy that, I do actually I have just launched a free homepage copy review that I'm offering to people. So it's literally I will go onto your homepage and I will give you a 10-minute video of reviewing your copy for you. To give you a sense of some of the things that you can quickly fix, basically. So that might give you a good sense of what needs to be done before you can then go off and pick up the copy kit and make those changes. So that's something else that I'm doing at the moment. But best way to reach out to me is through my website. I always say to people, fill out my questionnaire because it does wonderful things and gets you in my system nice and quickly. But I also do accept DMs in Instagram and LinkedIn if you want to reach out to me there. I'm Sarah Wake Creative on both of those platforms. And those are the two that I'm probably most active on.
Awesome. We will have those links in the show notes if you want to go check that out and connect with Sarah. And I just have to ask, because can I submit for a copy?
Yeah, absolutely. Please do. It's very new. So it's nice to be able to get some practice in with it. So.
Yay. Awesome. Yeah. I would love to, because I've definitely have that on my to-do list is to go back and fix my homepage because I definitely threw it together very quickly. And I'm sad to say like, that was a long time ago. It's been almost a year and I haven't gone back yet. So it's definitely
totally fine.
On a priority.
No worries.
I'd love to do that.
Cool. I will make sure I send you the link then.
Awesome. Well, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for being here. And I can't wait to check out your presentation for the summit.
Thank you. It's been wonderful chatting with you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. This episode may have ended, but there are ways we can stay in touch until next time. You can join me at thetarareed.com, where you can find tons of blog posts and resources that will also help you grow your business. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at introvertcoach, where I share more introvert-friendly and service-based business tips with you. If you love what you're hearing, drop a 5-star rating and review telling me what you are loving about the podcast so that I can continue to encourage as many introverted entrepreneurs as possible. Until next time, keep using your introvert superpowers.